Hi, this is Jim Oberhofer. I am the crew chief for the Mack Tools Top Fuel Dragster, driven by Doug Coletta, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
.720 WGN on the road with Dane here live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And on the line with us now, we've got the crew chief for the Mack Tools Top Fuel Dragster, driven by Doug Coletta. He is the vice president for operations for Coletta Motorsports over there in Michigan and author of Top Fuel for Life, Lessons from a Crew Chief. Honored to have the one and only Jim Oberhofer. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, Dane. Thanks for having me today.
You know what? I got to tell you, and covered motorsports for a long while, interviewed lots of NHRA drivers, covered a bunch of races, and we always say on the show that there's absolutely no substitute for being there live and in person. Television has gotten a lot better, and it can capture a lot of the excitement. Certainly, they haven't gotten to the smell of vision yet, you know, or the vibrations and just the feelings that you get from being there. But yesterday, I got a chance. We had the Frank Holly Dragster Driving School here at Chicagoland Speedway and at Route 66 Raceway. So I got a chance to get into one of the kind of downpowered dragsters in the Top Fuel style. It was absolutely amazing. I don't know how anyone can get in there, do that, and then not want to do that their entire life.
Well, that's pretty impressive, Dane. I mean, for you to be able to go out and experience that at Frank Holly School. I know he does a great job with that. My daughter's been through his school, and Frank is just a very, very good guy, very knowledgeable guy, and definitely, I'm sure that was a great experience for you.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. But for a guy like yourself, that you think about race fans, they look forward to those races, those events. It is a highlight of their week, of their year, sometimes of their life. You do it week in and week out with multiple teams, handling a lot of the different elements for Coletta Motorsports, but also as a crew chief for Doug. So what is it like? I mean, from an adrenaline rush standpoint, is it just too much where you just kind of ease up the rest of the week, or are you an adrenaline junkie?
You know, I'm an adrenaline junkie. I mean, I've always, when I was much younger, I always thought, obviously, it would be very cool to drive one of these things, you know, whether it's a Top Fuel dragster or a funny car. And as I grew and I got bigger, you know, it's like, okay, they don't want 220-pound guys driving these race cars anymore. So I had to kind of set my sights on something different within the sport. And for me, that was the mechanical side of things. I always had a fascination with cars and the growing up around them, my dad having junior fuel dragsters and Top Fuel dragsters and then owning a paint body shop. I was always around cars and always wanted to know and understand how things worked. And, for me, that adrenaline rush now comes from being able to make a car go as quick and fast as I can possibly make it go in 1,000-foot distance. And, you know, luckily for me, I have such a talented driver in Doug Coletta that's able to make all that happen for me. You know, without the talents of Doug Coletta, the talents of the team, you know, there are no great runs. So it's a different adrenaline rush, and it's when you're standing on the starting line and you're working on your race car, you're getting ready to see your race car make that lap down the drag strip against another opponent. And, you know, you have two cars that are making almost 11,000 horsepower, and the sound and the smells, everything about it. I mean, I tell people, I said, imagine going to, like, a Metallica concert, an Iron Maiden concert, an AC/DC concert, and they're all playing at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And that's what it's like being on the starting line of an NHRA race watching, you know, a Top Fuel car run or a funny car run. It's just simply an amazing, exciting experience.
For the fans, that's what they see. That's what they get to enjoy is all of that. You know, I wanted to get, and for the listeners, for you to share from the crew chief's perspective, you know, the kind of things that you can't do. It's a different kind of sport in racing where we've had, you know, Larry McReynolds on and other crew chiefs, you know, where there's so much time throughout maybe 3 or 4 hours to make adjustments, give instruction, give advice, kind of guidance and kind of change things up. But with you guys, you know, you've got to have it all right and dialed in. And then, like you said, you've got to depend on talented drivers like Doug and the rest of the team at Coletta to go ahead and get it done. But as a crew chief, what kind of things are you doing? Is it all, you know, just the pre-race, like here's what we need to do or here's the things to look for, because it all happens in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, and unlike other forms of motorsports where you could maybe make up a bad lap or something like that, you can't do that in drag racing. You get one shot at that racetrack at that particular time, and it doesn't matter if you're the number one qualifier racing against the number 16 qualifier on race day. You have to have your act together on that particular run. And there's so many things that can happen with these cars, you know, that are unforeseen. And I kind of compare a crew chief to like a weatherman. You know, weathermen, they always get a hard time because, like, oh, well, the weatherman said it was going to be 80 and sunny today, but it's 50 and raining. They're not always right all the time because there's a lot of guessing that goes on, you know, with predicting weather. It's the same way with tuning a top fuel dragster or a funny car. You're guessing a lot. You're making educated guesses with all the tools that you have available to you. But bottom line is when you get up there on the racetrack and when they tell you to fire your car up, everything that you've done and you've planned, you know, for that particular run and those particular conditions, it's a guess, you know, and your hope is that it's going to run the quickest and fastest that you can possibly make it run at that particular time. But the reality is there's so many things that can happen in less than 4 seconds that can alter how that car runs, you know, alter the ET or change things. So many different things that a lot of times you're not prepared for. There's 10-cent parts that fail, you know, and then cause a car to not run. Or, you know, something happens with a tire. I mean, there's so many things that go on that can change the outcome of a race that is just unbelievable. I mean, a perfect example, last week we were racing in Bristol, Tennessee. We're number two qualifier with Doug's MacTools dragster, and we have to race our teammate, Sean Langdon, in the Global Electronic Technologies dragster, and he was number 15 car qualifier. And, you know, when you look at the matchup, it should have been an easy win for Doug Coletta, but we lost. And we thought we had prepared everything properly to deal with the racetrack. The racetrack was very hot. The air conditions were very tricky, and we just missed the setup on it. And it's disappointing, you know, because when you go up there, your intentions are you want to run the best that you possibly can. And when you don't do that, you have to be accountable for that. You know, and for me, it's like, wow, I came back and I looked at the run, and all the information I had, and I said, I just missed it. I missed the setup entirely on that car that caused it to smoke the tires at, you know, 300, 400 feet. And that's tough. I mean, because you don't get a do-over. Right. You're done for the day. So you don't get to come back. Your day is done racing, and other teams get to move on and go to the next round. And that's the tough part. You know, on Sunday, one of these things is when you have that bad lap, 99% of the time you're not coming back for another race that day. And in other forms of motorsports, you know, you can have a bad lap and the car doesn't run quite as good. The team can make a pit stop, make some adjustments, come in, and next thing you know, the car is back out there running very well. So, you know, there's different strategies in drag racing as opposed to other forms of motorsports, right. But ours is tricky. I mean, it's a gut feel. It's a gut feel of what you're doing. It's a gut feel for what you think you can get away with on the racetrack. And we have a lot of technology available to us, but it still comes down to a gut feel.
You know, and you try to prep as much as you can in advance. You've got to think racing against your own teammate, it changes a little bit of the psyche, right? And I liken it a little bit to golf in a way that you train and prepare as much as you can, but you still, it's so much just instinct and reflex, right? What the driver does in there, and you need to be able to kind of communicate that and kind of inspire them to be in their best mental position to do it. And so I want to kind of talk a little bit about the book. I think as a crew chief, you're going to do everything you can on the equipment side and the setup side, but you know, I'm sure, right? A driver in the best frame of mind and confident is the driver that you want and the one that's going to be the most successful. So on the experience side and the inspirational side and the communication side, what made you think that what it is that you had to do a life in racing and certainly inspiring a lot of success out there on the track, that it would be the kind of thing that people who had nothing to do with racing could certainly, you know, get something out of, enjoy and experience along with you in the book?
Well, you know, one of the things I learned in my life, and I used to look at what I do, you know, being a crew chief for a professional drag racing team, it's a very competitive world. And for the most part, you're judged by how good you do on the racetrack. You know, how many times your car wins, how many times your car sets light, low ET or sets records and things like that. And people want to judge you because of that. You know, and so you put, you know, me as a crew chief, I mean, I always put all this pressure on myself that, you know, you've got to win, you've got to run low ET, and that's what's going to make you happy in life and you know, is having that success. And I lived my life for a long time that way, and, you know, I never really understood. I mean, I had a beautiful wife, a beautiful daughter. They were my biggest fans, and they loved me no matter whether we ran low ET of the race and won the race, or if we smoked the tires every run and were beat first round or didn't even qualify, their love for me never changed. But I didn't see it that way. And it took an experience for me with my late wife, Tammy, coming down, getting with stage 4 metastatic lung cancer, and then ultimately succumbing to that 13 months later, for me to really get a reality check. And I started looking at things a lot differently. And I used to go out to the racetrack and think that the only way that I could be happy is if that car ran good, if we had success winning races, and that was the only thing that would make me happy. Well, I started changing things a lot, and I started going out to the racetrack really realizing that, you know, hey, I'm getting to do something that I love to do. And there's not many people in this world that can say, hey, I'm a crew chief for a top fuel dragster. I mean, it's a very small group of people. I mean, it's like saying that you're a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
There's only 32 guys that could say that out there right now. And being a crew chief for a top fuel car or a funny car, there's not many of those people in the world. You know, and then I started looking at, like, the people that I work with, and my daughter gets to work with me right now, and my brother, and so many people that are close friends and family. And then just the sport of drag racing itself is a very tight-knit group as well. And I started thinking to myself, I'm like, why am I so miserable if I come out to the races if our car doesn't do well? And I started changing my frame of mind and my thought process when I came out to the races, and really started embracing the opportunities that I had, the people that I get to work with, the things that I get to do, tuning our 11,000 horsepower race car, making it go 330 plus miles an hour in less than 4 seconds. I mean, this is cool stuff. I mean, so I started embracing that and becoming a lot happier. And then all of a sudden, our team started becoming more successful. So my belief is now, instead of success leading to happiness, it's reverse. It's happiness leads to success. And that's something that I try to preach in my book, to get people to not look past things that are important in your life. You know, don't take your family for granted. Don't take certain things for granted, because, you know, before you know it, it's gone.
I think that's an important piece of advice, and it's the kind of stuff that everybody can relate to. So the racing and the career, and I think you could put it up, you know, against a lot of different vocations. That may just be the backdrop, but the other stuff is stuff that people can relate to, that everybody, I think, can get something from that message. You mentioned it, you know, value your family. You go out there and be super appreciative of the things that you get to do that bring you your joy, and really appreciate the positions and the good things that you have, whatever it is that you have in your life, instead of just worrying about maybe the things that you don't necessarily have yet. And all of that. You mentioned, you know, it's an elite club. It's a very small fraternity that you work within. It's, you know, millions of fans all over the country. People watch it on television. You get to travel the country. As you travel the country, and our country is a big country, lots of different stuff going on, and people who have maybe read the book are fans of what you do and see a different side. And Jim Oberhofer becomes more things to more people. What kind of feedback have you gotten where people either enjoyed the book, they loved, I'm sure there's a lot of great racing stories in there, but also those important messages?
Well, it's really me. I get a lot of compliments from a lot of people that I put myself out there in a book, and I was, you know, very honest with my failures in life and things that I've done that were wrong in life, and you know, trying to share those stories with people so maybe they can learn from those and possibly help themselves out down the road. But you know, the feedback has been amazing. You know, when I'm out at the racetrack and you get a fan that comes up and they say, you know, ask me to sign a copy of the book for them, and they read the book and they said, you know, I have a loved one that I lost to cancer, whether it was a spouse, a brother, a sister, a mother, father, aunt, uncle, something like that. And being able to hear stories from people and have these people share stories with me has been very humbling to me, and very life-changing. And it's, you realize that there's so many people out there that have gone through very similar circumstances and, you know, are looking for a direction or looking for something. And to be able to hopefully give them a little bit of a direction or maybe make a little bit of a positive impact on their life has been huge to me. And, you know, it's funny, I think a lot of people, too, you know, some of the hardcore racing fans thought I was writing this book and it was going to be all about how to tune a top fuel dragster or something like that. And when they read it, they were caught off guard by it. But most people, you know, 99.9% of the people really enjoyed the book, and there was enough racing in there to satisfy their appetite. But then there was also a lot of other things in there that helped them with their life as they move forward. And that's been very rewarding to me and very humbling, like I said.
I think it's great. It gives, you know, people, they see you guys, you know, every week on television, and so very little about what is in those broadcasts allows them to kind of get that backstory to be able to relate to the people behind, you know, what's going on in the track. I want to let the listeners know we're talking with Jim Oberhofer. Jim O, he's the crew chief for the Mack Tools Top Fuel Dragster. You know, the one driven by Doug Coletta. He's vice president for operations for Coletta Motorsports, author of Top Fuel for Life, Lessons from a Crew Chief. I know it's highly rated on Amazon, so you can get it at Amazon.com. Encourage everybody to get out there, get the book. There's enough racing in there for all of you racing fans. You get to, I'm sure, some great behind the scenes stories from some of your favorite tracks and certainly your favorite drivers, but enough of everything else in order to help you kind of close that book and feel like you're a better person, just like you have, Jim, right? After writing it. Now, you mentioned on the road, and you guys are going to be coming to Chicago, the Chicago area, pretty soon, Route 66. Before we let you go, you want to leave us with a few thoughts, as long as they're positive. No, I'm kidding. Anything honest about your time in Chicago?
Oh, I absolutely love it. You know, Chicago for us, it's kind of like another home race for us. It's not that far away from our shop here in Ypsilanti, Michigan. And, you know, so it's nice to go there because you get a lot of our hometown fans and friends and family that come to that race. It's a beautiful facility. Route 66 is by far one of the nicest facilities out on the tour, if not the nicest. And, you know, a lot of great memories there. You know, we've won races there. We've run the quickest and fastest times in the drag racing history at that facility. You know, I enjoy coming there just because it's Chicago. I mean, and it's so many great legendary things that have come out of Chicago, you know, whether it's football greats or Michael Jordan. I mean, that's the greatest basketball player of all time. I was a fan of the Cubs winning the World Series last year, even though I'm kind of a Tigers fan. I really enjoyed that the Cubs won the World Series, and it's just a cool place. It's a really cool city, beautiful city, and I just love coming there.
We're going to be excited to have you in the entire, you know, all those teams from Coletta, always some of the favorites, not only for the fans, but viewers all over the country as well. So one more time with the website, people can learn more about what it is that's going on with the teams. Remember, you're the overarching leader of the entire fleet, and then also specifically for the book, Top Fuel for Life.
Well, yeah, you can check out a lot about the Coletta team if you go to teamcoletta.com. A lot of information about the Coletta team. Also, NHRA.com is a great place to go to find out about not only the Coletta team, but all the events that NHRA puts on, especially around upcoming events like what's going to be going on in Joliet in a couple weeks. As far as my book, I have a website, topfuelforlife.com. A lot of cool things about the book and where you can get it, you know, at amazon.com. I also started a foundation in the name of my late wife, Tammy, called the Tammy O Foundation. It's a donor-advised fund, and we support all sorts of 501c3 charities around the country. And, you know, it's a really cool program for me that's allowed me to get more involved in other aspects of life to try to help out people any way that I can.
Jim Oberhofer doing so many great things on the track. Some of the best things that he is doing right now are off the track and in life in general. So thanks, Jim, for what you're doing. Can't wait to have you guys and the entire Kalitta team here in Chicago. And thanks for being on WGN today.
Thank you for having me, Dane.